everybody, welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history. It's my real friend Patrick Dean, who really doesn't take it real seriously.
Mm-mm.
But he rolls with it. He shows up. So far, almost 150 weeks.
Woo! What number is this?
Pretty good. This is 40-something?
Excellent.
Is that great? Right?
That's my favorite number.
40-something?
When someone asks me what my favorite number is, I say it's 14-something.
As far as my five-year-old is concerned, the highest number right now is 100. So we've gone off the map.
I mean.
So it's hard to keep track. This is 146, I think.
Okay.
It's pretty good. We're almost at the three-year mark.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 3 years in, same number of listeners we had 2 days in. It's going pretty great. How was your week?
It's good. It was fine, I guess. It was a long pause trying to think of what any of it consisted of.
Okay.
Weather is beautiful, so we're outside a whole bunch.
Okay. Shut up. All right.
I mean, it's nice.
Yeah, must have been. It was kind of cold here. We didn't really do anything. And today is my first day of spring break. Now you're probably noting it's March 3rd.
I am.
Which feels insane, and you're right. But today's the first day of spring break. It's the Monday of spring break. And if you had asked me like several weeks ago, like, hey, if you had to engineer the perfect time, like the perfect hour, the perfect second for one of your children to throw up, what would it be? I would have said at that point, I would have said, I know exactly. Mm-hmm. 5 a.m. Monday, March 3rd, first day of spring break, 3 hours before daycare, ruins the whole day. Mm-hmm. That the one day, because I have meetings the rest of this week.
Sure.
The one day I have fucking nothing. that's the right day. Mm-hmm. Do you want to guess what happened at 5 a.m. this morning?
I feel like I'd be more successful guessing which of your children chose to break the seal.
No, so you've picked up on the point of the story here. Yeah, do you want to guess which one of the two?
I'm going to go with ID.
50-50. No.
Really?
It was Maple.
Wow,
it was Maple. She, at some point during the night, she had crept into our bed, and I hadn't woken up for that, so I didn't know she was in there. But at, 5 a.m., I think it was 5 a.m. on the dot. From the other end of the bed, I just hear, whoop! And I thought, God, here we go. This, nope. And she's fine. She threw up.
Well, yeah, she didn't. Yeah.
No, she's a kid. She, throws up. I mean, on the drop of a hat. The whole day. So she stayed home from daycare, and the whole day, of course, she's like, "Can we play? I'm so excited to be alive. I feel great." So she's fine, which is great. It's the one day, and I was like, "Yep. That checks out."
I think a million dollar idea will be, I will open a daycare for kids that are sick. I think that's what I'm going to do.
If you just log your illness with us, we can plan for it. We have different rooms.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It will be not unlike solitary confinement in prison, but there will be a Roku in the room with them.
Oh, so that's all they need.
They won't realize.
And maybe an iPad on the wall just in case.
Yep. Excellent ventilation, HEPA 7 filters. It'll be just fine. But yeah. Yeah. Daycare.
I know you're joking, but RFK Jr. is now in charge of HHS, so I think this is going to have some legs, actually. So I know some rich people. Let's set up a call after this recording.
Because I think RFK Jr.'s excuse will be, that's right, Patrick, none of them are ever sick.
And you will say, for the right amount of federal funding, I will agree, sir. You see, he was talking about the measles outbreak in Texas that has claimed at least one child's life, and he's like, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But the thing is about measles, it doesn't anymore. Usually doesn't happen. So it's going cool here in the US. Mm-hmm. So wherever you are, I hope you're having a cool life also.
I am officially tired of winning. I don't know if are you tired of winning yet?
I was tired of winning in 2017. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've just, we took a cool break from winning, I guess, for 4 years. And now I'm just, it's so much winning so fast and so confusingly. I'm done winning. Mm-hmm. Is that still a way that they're framing it?
I don't know if they're really framing anything at this point. I think the frame is in pieces on the ground. They're just burning it.
It's just, it's all data from here on out. And they're like political data. I do have one story before we get started. If you have the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm in class last week. I go into my class, my public relations class, on Thursday morning. It's, you know, 9:30. I'm getting prepared and my students are filtering in. And I get everything set and I look up and there's a person in the classroom I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. Now we're halfway through the semester. Mm-hmm. So this is not like a student that I've forgotten. It's just, I've not seen this face before.
Okay.
And not, I'm bad with faces, but not that bad.
And not like a huge, like a lecture type class, right?
No. Oh, no. Class. Good question. This is like 13 students.
Okay. So you would know if one of them was
almost new. Certainly. Okay. That's going to say 100%, but almost certainly. And so I see this student who I've never seen before, and I look at her and I'm kind of confused because mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And she looks at me back and she just kind of smiles. Mm-hmm. And just stares dead in my eyes. I'm like, this is so unsettling. And so I was like, I don't want to confront this person because she's the alpha.
She could have a gun. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. So I'm just going to let her sit there the whole time. But eventually I decided, I was like, oh, I should be in charge of this classroom. Mm. And so I go to her desk and I say, hey, sorry, are you in the wrong place? And she says, no, I'm a prospective student.
Oh, okay.
And I said, oh, because you know that'll be a thing that happens. Right. For sex students will come by and they'll shadow class or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, okay. I didn't receive any notice that you would be here, but okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And she says, yeah, this is political science, right? And I said, no, this is public relations. I said, are you in the wrong class? And so she's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be in Dr. So-and-so's class. So I was like, well, I don't know, but let's look it up in the schedule. Mm-hmm. So I look up the schedule and Dr. So-and-so does not have a class at that time.
Okay.
And I said, their next class is not called political science and it is in 3 hours. So I said, I don't know. Our school is running great and mm-hmm. they've sent you here, I guess. And I should note, this child is 13 years old.
Oh, okay. Another curveball.
which isn't quite as strange as it sounds because we have this program at Mary Baldwin that very gifted young girls can mm-hmm. skip high school and go into college.
Oh.
Here, yeah. Don't ask me questions. I don't have any answers for questions, but it's a thing that we do. And so there is like this whole separate dorm for them and everything. Like they will just be in your class.
Right.
So I'm adjusting.
Okay.
So it's not.
Yeah.
So it's not so weird that she's 13, mm-hmm. but it's also very, very weird that she's 13. Mm-hmm. but she's there, but she's very, very polite. And I said, okay, so we're chatting before class. Where are you from? Blah, blah. Anyway, so class starts. And I said, well, okay, well, you're very welcome to stay here if you want. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, this is midterm presentations day. So I don't know how interesting it'll be for you, but the students are giving their presentations on this midterm project. And she goes, oh, great. So we start class. And the students start giving their group presentations on things. And at the end of every presentation, I give students like a chance to like, you know, I'll give some feedback and I'll say, you know, does anyone else have any questions or comments for this group? Mm-hmm. Not a single person ever offers that because
no.
they know if they comment, exactly, then they're going to get commented
it's
on.
It's the unspoken agreement. Yes. I've been there.
And they all hold to it. They're all classic, mm-hmm. right? They all absolutely not. No, mm-hmm. we're in this together. They're all Spartacus. Mm-hmm. But this 13-year-old prospective student, she's raising her hand and she's asking them questions.
Okay.
Okay. Now my students are being very kind with her. They're being great. They're like, they're answering her questions. They're treating her like a peer. They did a great job the whole time. Mm-hmm. And the questions were great. Like, obviously, this is a very intelligent child if she's here to, like, go to college at 13. Like, so it was, you know, all great. But I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? So this goes on for a while. So we have a few presentations. And then the last group is going up. And we've got, like, 45 minutes left of class. We're going to get out so early. Mm-hmm. Everyone is excited. We're all like, yeah, okay, this is a great class. The last group stands up to go to the front of the class. But as they're standing up, this girl raises her hand and she says, can I present? I said, I'm sorry, what? And she said, can I practice? Can I do it? Can I present once? Mm-hmm. And I said, do you have a presentation? And she goes, well, I thought maybe I could present one of the ones that's already gone. I could present their presentation. And I said, so one of the groups who already presented, you want to do their same presentation, but just you want to do it. And she said, yeah, is that okay? And, you know, I want to help with enrollment. And I'm like, I guess so. And I'm so now it's funny because now I'm looking at my students and pleading with my eyes to please help me out of this situation. And
one of you pull the fire alarm right now. I will give you $20 and we will not say a word about it.
But they don't know if this is a test or not, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't know what to do. So they, and again, God bless their hearts, as they say in the South where I live now. They're all so good. And they're like, we have time. Yeah, she could go. That'd be great, mm-hmm. actually. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, yeah, come on up. So I pull up one of the presentations that we've already seen. Mm-hmm. And I say, here you go. And here's how you move the screen. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. And she does. She does the whole presentation. Now, this is important. So the project that they're presenting on is it's a public relations plan for a new program at my college.
Okay.
This is how we would take this new program and release it to the public and do the announcements and the rollout mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. This girl knows nothing about any of this. She has no context for what she is seeing on the screen. Mm-hmm. And the students have not done, I would say, a great job thus far of really explaining it actually in their presentations. So she's going in kind of blind, but she does, I mean, her presentation skills are excellent.
Okay.
She speaks clearly, confidently. She's reading the slides and she's pulling it off pretty well, except that she has no idea what she's talking about. And so she does it, and then she says, thank you so much, and sits down. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that was great. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was great. Okay, last group, are you ready? And they're like, yes, please. So last group was up, they present. I give some feedback to the whole class, blah, blah, blah. I say, okay, class is over. Please leave. This has been so strange. Everyone walks out except for this 13-year-old prospective student. And she sticks around. She comes up to the desk and she says, could you grade my presentation? And I'll remind you, she's not part of this class.
Right, yeah.
that's the key element here. And I said, I said, hey, listen, your presentation was great. You spoke confidently. You're so clear. Like, you made great eye contact. Like, considering the fact that you didn't know what you were talking about, that's A+ work. Like, you did really, really well. That's an A. That's an A presentation for
sure. A+. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Now she doesn't know this. We don't have A+ in college. we only go up to A. But I was like, that's an A for sure. And she looks at me and she goes, and she's not smiling.
Right.
And she says, no, I mean, can you give me a real grade? I said, do you mean like, in the grade book? And she said, yes. And I said, because the answer obviously is no.
Right, yeah, but no, you aren't enrolled in this class.
And it's not like I have a notebook here where I could write it in. This is the 21st century.
Right, yeah.
but I said, in the grade book, she said, yes. And I said, yeah, I'll see what I can do. And she said, thank you so much. And she left. The weirdest experience of my academic career. And that was my Thursday.
Okay.
And I thought, well, at least next week I'll be home all week with no children around. So that's how that went. This one page is being printed so slowly, but I don't think it's fine. It's fine.
Get one of those old like dot matrix printers, like going, yeah.
Yeah. And you gotta like fold and fold and fold and fold and fold and carefully tear the edges.
But the best part of those dot matrix printers was printing embarrassing banners. That was the best part of it.
Oh man.
The kids these days,
nothing better.
They don't know.
Honestly, like, technology has not produced any solution for that.
Absolutely not. No.
It's amazing.
You can go on all the major printer sites right now. You know, Canon, Brother, the other ones. None of them are offering banner printing. None of them.
No, none of them. Even like cool, like hip design sites like Canva. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you want an 8.5 by 11? We can do it. Do you want 11 by 17? We can do it. Do you want a banner? Good fucking look.
Here's a stapler and a little bit of creativity. You figure it out.
Man, that is really, I mean, we need a solution. Mm-hmm. We can send a man to Mars, I guess. I don't know. But we can't print a banner? Ridiculous. Let me tell you, I printed so many banners when I was in like grade school, early high school.
My whole room is
obscene.
Whole room is decorated in those shitty like ASCII art banners.
Oh yeah. And like the pages were all like white and green stripes for some reason. I don't say you was that.
They were like accounting pages or something like that. That your mom was like, it's okay, you can play with it if you just shut up for a few minutes. You just go in the other room and play with it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The good old days when we had dial-up internet at 56 kps and porn took 90 days to download. We'll miss you. And we'll see you again soon, possibly.
By the time it downloaded, it was a hell of a lot less exciting than it was when it started.
By the time it downloaded, it was suddenly breakfast, and I was not in the mood for that anymore. Oh, boy. Anyway, so with all that in mind, are you ready for a ghost story?
Absolutely.
I want to give, by the way, a very special thank you to Caroline Jones, longtime listener, who chimed in today with these notes. She took these notes for this story today.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Chimed in today.
Oh, no, sorry. She chimed in for these notes for today. She chimed in, I would say, 3 days ago.
Okay.
She's not on the Clayton Smith schedule. She's on like a normal human schedule.
I'm wondering if maybe you're in the Discord begging for like notes for shows.
Does anyone have anything? Good question. I understand why you asked it. Very fair. No, sorry. She chimed in for today with these notes. And if you've been a longtime listener, you'll know Caroline, she drops in notes every once in a while and she always picks absolute bangers. She finds stories that I have never come across in my well-researched life. Not how she does it, but she comes across some of the best stories. So y'all are in for a treat. Okay, so any questions, Patrick?
No, we haven't done anything yet, so no.
Just checking. Any questions about anything else?
No.
Before we do.
No, life's right. Good. No questions about life. So no.
Don't talk about life. We already did the whap, whap, whap.
Okay.
Francis Bacon was born on January 22nd, 1561, in London, England.
Mm-hmm.
His family was well connected to important people at the court of Queen Elizabeth I. Not to brag.
Mm-hmm.
His father, Nicholas Bacon, held the title Lord Keeper of the Great Seal.
any background on what that entails?
Yes,
the Great Seal,
the animal.
Okay, yeah.
There was a giant seal.
Just the one. Yeah.
And they're like, someone has to keep this safe. So Lord Keeper of the Great Seal was the person in charge of the physical custody of the Great Seal of the realm.
Hmm. Okay.
Does that help answer?
Sure. Your question? We're slowly materializing here. Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is the metal thing that you stamp into wax.
Oh, the mushing, the mushing letter. Thing. Yeah, yes. Okay. Yeah. There's just a guy?
Guy. I mean, it makes sense. Like, this is someone has to keep eyes on that thing.
So this guy could be replaced by a velvet box on a table.
Well, until someone has to sign something at a different table.
Okay, then you get, what am I going to do? This. Am I going to move this heavy fucking box? Or am I going to ask, what's his name, George?
Nicholas Bacon.
Nicholas Bacon. We're going to ask old Nicky Bacon to come on over here.
Nicky Bacon. This is like, if you've seen Veep, this is Tony Hale's job. He says that shoulder bag and he will carry this around. Someone has to, it seems so stupid, but it is true that someone must carry the Great Seal. Now, it seems like you could roll this into another responsibility at the castle.
Who is the guy that tastes the food, make sure I don't die? Can he also carry the stamp?
Someone else has to be able to do this. This is not a one-man job.
Do we need a third guy to melt the wax, too? Is that another?
I assume
people,
so.
How many people are on the payroll here?
There's a waxman, there's a flamester, and there's seal guy. Yeah. Yeah. Now, Francis was the second child that Nicholas Bacon had with his second wife.
Second child with his second wife. So his fourth child.
So Nicholas was married. They had some children, I guess.
Sure.
No, not fourth child necessarily. Okay. Maybe, but I don't know. And then the wife, number one, I assume died.
Of course.
Because cholera. It's the 16th century. Yeah. Or pick your poison, literally. Gets remarried to a second wife. Now, the second wife's name is Lady Anne Cook Bacon.
Oh.
Which is, historically speaking, perfect. So Francis is the second child that Nicholas had with Anne Cook Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Francis is educated at home in his early years owing to the poor health that he had as a child.
Was he perhaps extremely massive and diabetic from having a mother whose name is Cook Bacon?
Was he real big and real happy? Because that would make a lot of sense right now. When he was 12 years old, he enrolled at Trinity College at the University of Cambridge for 3 years.
Oh, so he also went to college as a tweener. Interesting.
Yeah, which I guess is common at this point. I don't know.
I mean, it's common nowadays, I guess, too.
He showed up one day in class and said, "Can I present something I know nothing about?" And the teacher was like, "I don't want to get fired, so I guess you can." So it's a very familiar story for us. He began to study science and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Like a real cool guy who's definitely going to get laid someday.
Absolutely.
It was during this time that he was first introduced to the Queen himself, Queen Elizabeth. She was familiar with the family, but not with him in particular. But when he was at school, they were introduced, and she was very impressed with his precocious intellect.
Okay.
Which I don't think is a euphemism. I think maybe actually just his precocious intellect. Between the ages of 15 and 18, Bacon traveled in France, Italy, and Spain, learning about politics, languages, and civil law.
Okay.
He would have preferred to stay abroad for a while, but his father died suddenly.
Oh, and he had to come home and run the civil law firm? Or maybe just to
come home and run the cookery of bacon? The bacon cookery?
My dad needs me to come home and be the stamp guy. I know I've been doing a lot of cool stuff out here on the road, guys, but
someone's got to hold that stamp.
Yeah.
For just hours on end with no movement. Someone has to let their muscles atrophy while they hold this thing and do nothing with it for days and days.
Do not tell Elon how many people are involved in the stamping of the letters. We will all be out on our asses. I swear to God.
And he will not be able to find our email addresses to hire us back. Yeah. And he realizes we have to have at least one stamp guy.
Wait, he took the stamp with him? Fuck, why didn't I even leave the stamp?
All right, email him back.
How?
So his father dies and Bacon goes back home. Actually, I think mostly to get that good inheritance.
Oh, I believe it. Yes. I can only imagine how filthy rich stamp guy is.
If your one job is to like be in the Queen's court and just like hold this very light piece of metal for always. God, what a fucking dream.
Mm-hmm. You are either like the sixth richest person in the country, or you eat like dirt at lunch.
Or the sixth poorest person. Yeah. There is no in between there. Turns out, though, Francis was only left about a fifth of the money he expected to be left.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame. Where'd the rest of the money go?
I guess to all his siblings.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Caroline did her best, and there's a lot of holes in this story that are not her fault. They are history's fault. We know a lot about Francis Bacon later, but not so much now. Now, I did go back. I found some things to fill in some holes, so I want to be clear. I did help. I did some work here, research-wise. So it's like 90% Caroline. It's 10% Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
In this, we don't know where the money went, but I have more notes.
Okay. Yeah.
Can we go on?
Okay.
So he's broke now, and he turns to his uncle, Lord Burghley. Mm. He turns to him for help. Burghley?
Lord Burghley. Okay.
Lord Burghley.
Lord Burghley. Is he also, he's not Burghley Bacon?
No. Well, I wish you hadn't asked that question. So I don't think so, but as I think you probably know, at least by now on this podcast, Lord Burghley, God, we're going to get so many fucking,
Have Jeremy take that all out. I don't have to ask.
No, it's fine. Lord Burghley, in Britain, my understanding is you could be your Lord whatever. That means you're Lord of whatever, but your name is not that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So his name could be Bill Bong, and it's Bill Bong, and you're in charge of the area that we call Burghley for no reason. Now you're like, Bill Bong Burghley, Bill Bong, Lord Burghley, Bill Bong. And I don't know. So his name is not Burghley.
Right.
I don't think. Or Bong? Maybe it is.
Is it Bong? I didn't.
His name could be Bong. So anyway, thank you for asking that question. But anyway, so Lord Burghley, Francis turns to him for help and asks Lord Burghley, who's very well connected, and he works in the Queen's sphere. So Francis asks if his uncle, Lord Burghley, will help him get hired on in a government job.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is, that's cake. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Another stamp job. Could I
perhaps maybe just hold the stamp?
Maybe the wax guy this time? I don't know. Maybe,
you know what? I'll do
yeah.
flame.
Yeah. I don't want
to picky.
I don't want to follow my father's footsteps. I can. Sorry.
I hate how close I got to just spitting my tea out all over the keyboard. I hate how much that was funny. So he says, can I have a job in the government? Mm-hmm. And his uncle says, no.
Really?
So oof. I'm starting to think, again, we don't have a lot of details here. Mm-hmm. If it's me, I'm mm-hmm. starting to think that maybe his family doesn't like him very much. 'Cause it's not going great. So now Bacon is like, fuck, what do I do? Right. He's still just a teenager. Mm-hmm. His family apparently hates him. Mm-hmm. So he ends up, you know, going back to school where he becomes, do you want to guess, the occupation that he studies?
I'm going to go where the even money
1500s
is.
In college. Go.
Surveyor.
God, I hoped you would say that. It's wrong, but it's in the Discord. We've had a lot of people now lamenting the fact that we haven't had a surveyor in a good long time. And I feel that we had such a good run early on, and but no surveyor. Do you want one more chance?
Tax collector. I don't really know.
Lawyer. He's a lawyer.
Lawyer. Okay. Well,
it's the other one. There were three.
Yep.
he becomes a lawyer and he's appointed as an outer barrister.
Okay.
Do you know what an outer barrister is?
Yeah. You do law outside of the country, like international law. That's what an outer barrister is.
No. So this is what it means. This is the type of lawyer that is, and I struggle a little bit to wrap my head around this because whatever, but this is the type of lawyer who's allowed to plead cases from the bar in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
But if you want to go through the gate in the bar into the holiest right. of holies in the courtroom, whatever that's called, that's different.
That's inner barrister.
That's inner barrister.
Okay. So
the outer barrister, you can only go there. Now, I don't know what difference your argument makes from that point.
I mean, it's got to be a lot louder from out there. I'll tell you that.
That's true. But if you can shout, I would think that would be the same kind of argument from inside. So I don't know what the rules are about, like, who can say what from outside or inside the bar. I do have a hunch, though. This is where the term bar exam comes from.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
I didn't look it up. I have to assume that, like, then you pass a bar exam, then you're a real lawyer.
Then you're, then you go in, you don't have to shout.
Then you just, like, can't you walk right up to the judge and you shout in their face and you just scream at them. So he's doing that for a while. He was also elected several times as a member of parliament.
Hmm. Okay.
But unlike in America, that's not very lucrative, apparently.
And that job is all shouting, from what I understand. So,
oh, my God.
I guess it makes sense.
It doesn't pay as well, but it's so fun.
If you like the shouting part of outer barristership, this is the job for you.
So he's trying to figure out what to do. He still doesn't have very much money. He's like, I want to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Which we can all empathize with. And then about 1590, he meets a man named Robert Devereux.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Devereux is the Earl of Essex.
Right.
Which we all know what that means, so I'm not even going to explain it.
Exactly, yeah.
And at that time, the Earl of Essex, Robert Devereux, was a personal favorite of Queen Elizabeth I.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's see. Devereux, actually, he liked Bacon a lot. He tried to get him a good position at court, in Elizabeth's court.
Okay.
Now, he failed, because they were like, who is this guy? No.
Why is this guy shouting all the time? Does he not know?
If he wants to hold the stamp, he has to be so quiet. It's not going to work.
It's like the only requirement of being the stamp guy. Is he can't just be shouting the whole time.
Now, however, Devereux did present Bacon with a house and land
okay.
for free.
Well, fuck that.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I don't know why this happened. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of extra research into this. I think, and I don't know what's going on. It's very strange. I think that when Devereaux's father died, and Devereaux was very young, he became a ward of Lord Burghley.
Okay.
So Francis's uncle.
Right, right.
But it doesn't say they met until 1590, which was like 20 years later.
Right.
So I don't.
I mean.
Maybe.
You walk in, you drop some names. Hey, you know my Uncle Bong? Oh, interesting.
Oh, I love Bong.
Yeah. And you owe him a favor. Well, I think, you know what? Things would probably be evened out if you gave me a little castle, a little parcel.
It's like, I happen to have this one. I'm not using it. Yeah. Would you like to own it?
Yeah.
So I no longer have rights or anything to it? I don't know. So it's very strange. But he Devereaux gives Bacon this house and land. And then Bacon, of course, turns around and sells it because he needs money.
Here's a free house and land.
Thank you so much. For you to live on
and not die.
Let me call realtor.com real quick. He sells it for £1,800.
Okay.
Which, best I can calculate, is about 400,000 American dollars today.
Whew.
All right. Gracious. So, pretty good. That's like a, I mean, today, that's like a one-room house on no land.
Oh,
so that's
pretty good. 400 grand. You could retire on that if you were going to die the next month. But you could.
Yeah. Totally, and maybe fine. He will. Let's find out. So now he has $400,000. So he's doing pretty well. He's got cash, but he's living still beyond his means.
Okay.
He's not good with money.
He's ton of education, terrible with money, keeps selling all the free stuff he gets. Okay.
Yeah. I like, you would do so well right now in America.
Oh, absolutely.
So good. A few years later, in 1598, he is arrested for debt.
Oh, no.
He goes to debtor's prison. Now, he's not in jail for very long. He gets out, and then here's a quote. Afterward, his standing in the queen's eyes improved.
Okay.
So, and there's, Caroline nor I, neither of us could find why, like, what the fuck happened? Like, I don't know what he did to then become great in the eyes of the queen.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it was, the queen is now suddenly like, you're pretty good.
Maybe he learned magic in prison. You never know.
Maybe he learned the art of foot rubs.
If you're going to learn something in prison, it's foot rubs and magic are probably the two things you're most likely to come out really good at. Yeah.
Makes sense.
I love getting a foot rub at like a massage parlor and be like, oh my God, were you in prison recently?
Oh. This feels so good. Did my toes disappear? Oh no. So this is going great for him now. He's now appointed one of the queen's advisors.
Okay, it's foot rubs. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's gotta be. Now, not long after this happened, so Bacon is now, he's in the court, he's doing things, he's like writing memos to the queen about, you know, here's how I would approach these problems, and apparently they're well written and pretty smart. Mm-hmm. So he's making a name for himself, and while this is going on, Devereaux, the Earl of Essex, the one who gave him the house, he is tapped by the queen to go solve this whole Ireland problem.
He's the one that fixes it. Okay, good. I was always curious.
Who really got them under control? So she says, will you please, okay, go fix Ireland. Mm-hmm. They're getting loud. Will you just go shut them up?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Devereaux, of course, is like, oh, of course. Now, he's not French, but...
Right. but his attitude is, which is important.
His attitude is. And that will be his downfall, as we'll see. So he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And then Bacon sees this, and he's like, I don't know. He's like, and again, he and Devereaux are very good friends, but he's like, Dev, you're not the one for this. You're gonna be real bad, actually, at putting down this rebellion. This is not for you. So at that point, Bacon, who is, you know, he's pretty smart, he starts distancing himself from Devereaux.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He sees a sinking ship. He wants to step off. I get it.
We've had so many Titanic deaths on this story, and it's all because people won't step off the ship, right? Bacon's doing it. He's stepping off the ship. And again, I imagine this is so difficult because again, Devereaux gave him $500,000 property, like for nothing. But anyway, so he's backing away and he's kind of like, he's providing just this wall. So in 1599, Devereaux comes back from Ireland from putting down this rebellion. Mm-hmm. And the queen is like, did you fix it? And he's like, well, no, no, I didn't actually. He says, I did reach, we reached an agreement that we won't fight anymore.
Oh, it's the same thing.
So yeah. That's pretty good. And she's okay. Well, did we come out well in that agreement? And he says, no.
See, this is where you lie to the boss. This is where you got to sell it. You got to sell it to the boss.
Yeah. And he doesn't do that. Mm. So the queen's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth is pretty mad. She had given him, by the way, I didn't mention it. She had given him the largest force in England's history up to this point.
Oh.
16,000 men.
And he couldn't. Wow.
To go put down this Irish rebellion. And he fucking biffed it. Just. He's so bad at this. I mean, and it makes sense. Because like if Bacon is looking and being like, oh man, I love you so much and you've been so good to me. We are great friends, but you are going to fuck this up so bad. I can't know you anymore. Like if Bacon knew that in advance, he must have been the absolute wrong person. And it turns out he was. So Devereux totally falls out of the queen's favor. All done. He's put on trial then for being so bad at stuff. And he's found guilty for being real bad at stuff.
Hmm.
Now, the queen doesn't keep him locked up long.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I just want to say, like, I hate to bring kind of sexism into this podcast because, you know, we're not really about that here. One of the things that I think is a tragedy of history based on the work we've done here is that this is not the first time or the second time or maybe the third time that a queen has been like, I will grant you clemency. Like, it's okay. Like, go do your thing. Mm-hmm. And then later we'll regret it.
Correct.
Whereas the kings that we've talked about are all 100% to a man, like take his fucking head off. And I am anti-death penalty all the way through.
Right.
What I will say is, I don't know. History tells an interesting story about that. So the queen says, you know what? Let him go.
Mm-hmm.
She grants him his freedom, but she is still mad. Mm-hmm. So she wants to punish him still. So she takes away his right to oversee the sweet wine trade.
Oh, okay. Is that lucrative? It sounds kind of gross, but it's fine.
Oh, what a fucking, oh, what? I'm sorry.
Sweet wine, really?
We're not all so rich as you. We don't all have like such a nose as you have, Patrick.
We all don't have time. We don't have 6 months to wait for the wine to taste good. It must be drunk now with antifreeze in it.
I'm not sure that's how wine works, actually, but apparently it was very lucrative because she takes the rights away and now he suddenly has no income.
Ooh.
And now he's broke, where before he was rich enough to just give away $500,000 plots of land. So now he's broke and he's so mad at Queen Elizabeth. He's so mad that he raises up an army and he leads them in a rebellion against the crown.
The guy who couldn't do anything with 16,000 troops.
Well, it turns out that's going to be a really important point in this rebellion. Yes, that's correct. And so, of course, Bacon is sitting there thinking, oh, thank God. Woo! Glad I cut those ties. He did the right thing. So now he's no longer associated with this guy who's raising a rebellion against the queen. And here's a fun fact.
Wham!
When he was still employed by the queen, Devereux apparently used to give away knighthoods like fucking candy. Now, the queen only gave them very sparingly, like when they were, you know, very deserved.
Right.
But I guess Devereux was like Oprah out there in the field. Like, you get knighted. So much so, he would just like knight so many of his men that his own men used to say, quote, He never drew sword, but to make knights. Which I think is a sick burn. Did you like that one?
Yeah, it's fine.
You'd be surprised how hard it is to find a good like burn sound effect on the free sites. Mm. I don't know. Okay. Well, I thought you'd like it more. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I forgot the soundboard. It's fine. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So Devereaux leads this rebellion against the queen, and he is put down after, quote, a very short skirmish.
Anytime they label your rebellion a skirmish, you didn't do good. You did bad. You did bad.
You did real bad. Rebellion. Which it's funny because by some accounts, at this point in time, almost or even possibly more than one half of all the knights in England were knighted by Devereaux because he did so many. And so they were all really loyal to him. Like, right. Oh, he gave me my knighthood. Like, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. You know what the pension is for knighthood? It's crazy.
And so like so many of them were loyal to him and they all fought in this rebellion. So they had like good numbers if you look at like how many knights there are. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, do you mud?
Yeah.
Do you want to be a knight? So it's all these like idiots who marched against a queen and it didn't go great.
Mm.
So he's captured, and then Bacon is part of the legal team who ends up investigating Devereaux and preparing the charges against him.
Mm-hmm.
So he continues to be on the right side, I guess, in terms of where the queen is at least. Now Devereaux is found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
He is beheaded at the Tower of London on February 25th, 1601, which was only 17 days after the rebellion started. They're going real fast with this one.
Before the news cycle resets and everyone's on to like spring fashion or whatever, we got to get this done.
Yeah. Our budget does start in March. We really want to get this expense off the books. So can we please, like, if we can, any way we can do this before the 28th, that would be so good. Then eventually Elizabeth dies.
Right.
As people are wont to do. And King James I comes to the throne. And Bacon comes into even greater favor with him.
Mm, okay.
James fucking loves Francis Bacon. Loves him.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that they were sexual partners. He loves him, and we'll see how deep this goes. Bacon is appointed Solicitor General by the king.
Okay.
And then not long after that, he's appointed Attorney General.
Oh.
Head of all lawyers.
Wow.
Yeah. And as we all know, that's a very serious role.
Yeah.
No one weird or radical would be appointed to that. If you were someone like, I don't know, like fucking Pam Bondi, you would never get that
role. Absolutely not. No.
Never. And definitely not Matt Gaetz. Jesus fucking Christ. What do you think this podcast will be like when we do it from Canada?
It'll be, I think with the exchange rate, it'll be 75% longer and yet cheaper somehow. So
I think it sounds perfect, really. Let's see. So he's doing great. In 1606, Bacon marries a woman named Alice Barnum.
Mm-hmm.
Bacon was 45 years old. Alice was 14 years old.
Boy.
What?
It's not great.
If you wait a few more, maybe like one more, how old are you? Like two more years, you can marry the girl who's in my my class this week. If you want, I could get you her email address. Now, this does sound problematic, I admit. Mm-hmm. But in his defense, Alice was real wealthy.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, does that?
I mean, it doesn't change my personal opinion. It's still verboten to me.
5 to 14 is
But for the time, tough. Maybe that was totally kosher. I don't know.
I don't think so because you think like we read a lot about things like, you know, 19 to 14, and that feels problematic,
right?
Right? That feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
45 to 14, that's like another planet of bad.
As the attorney general, he's like really quickly like scanning through the books, like, no, that's not good. That's
laws, worse.
And like rips out like 17 pages. These aren't laws anymore.
Now the fire is so much warmer now. And then a contemporary of their wedding wrote, quote, Sir Francis Bacon was married yesterday to his young wench, which feels very unfair. In Marylebone Chapel, he was clad from top to toe in purple. And this is a fun fact.
Wham!
Purple was a royal color.
Right.
And non-royals were not allowed to wear it.
Oh, he was wearing white at the wedding. That's what he was doing here.
He was wearing white at the wedding.
That's a shame.
Well, but King James turned a blind eye to this conduct.
Ooh, okay.
This is the fact that makes me think maybe they had a little little fling going on. This feels okay. In 1617, the king showed his trust in Bacon by appointing him regent for a month while the king was went to Scotland, which means Bacon's in charge. He's the king, right, basically.
Yep. Babysit the country.
For a whole month. Don't fuck up too bad. He's like, you're king.
Mm-hmm. And if I die when I'm out there, you get to be king a little while longer.
Just a smidge longer. Will you do okay? You will? You sure? Good. So he becomes king. So he's in quite some favor with King James. In 1618, Bacon was made Lord Chancellor, which is one of the most important roles in England, I guess. I don't know what it's for.
It sits just below stamp guy. I don't know if you're familiar with the.
So it's a pretty big deal. He was also given the title of Baron Verulam of Verulam. I Googled Baron Verulam of Verulam, and all that came up was Baron Verulam of Verulam. Like, right. It was just like everyone on Google even is like, this is a normal thing to call a person.
Right.
I don't understand what questions you might have about why this is like what Verulam is. Or why you would have to be called Baron Verulam if you were in Verulam. Right. Unfortunately, though, Bacon, throughout all this, he's still in debt, despite being so fucking wealthy. Now, remember, his child wife is wealthy.
Also wealthy.
She's so rich.
Sure.
So he's got money. However, it turns out his marriage is said to have suffered as his wife did not like the fact that she had to make do with less money than she had been accustomed to, which I assume means he like took the dowry, blew it all on something. I don't know where his money's going. And then he's like, well, now eat these beans. And she's like, what are beans? So in 1621, Francis Bacon is accused of taking bribes.
Oh.
In his office as Lord Chancellor.
Oh no. Not good.
Would you take bribes?
If I was Lord Chancellor of Britain in the 1600s? Oh, absolutely.
If you were engineer at your current workplace, take bribes. Like if Disney reached out and they were like, "Listen, I know this roller coaster. It's a death trap. Yeah. But what if we give you $500,000?
What if we give you a free ride on it? I'd say, oh, okay, now we're talking.
Oh, so they've done their research. They know you better than I do. And they're like, it's going to take one free ride. So he's accused of taking bribes. Now, it turns out he is taking bribes. But the thing is, he's only taking the normal amount of bribes.
Okay.
Everyone is taking bribes.
Right.
In 1621, fucking everyone. It's expected that you will take bribes.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is actually where the concept of taxes come from. Is actually bribing officials. It's
probably true. So he is taking bribes, but he's not taking any more than he normally should be. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. But he's made enemies in Parliament. And they're, of course, looking for ways to get rid of him. So he is sentenced to a fine of £40,000.
I'm sure he doesn't have that. That's like $1 trillion nowadays.
It's over $9 million in today's money, which is ludicrous. I do love a good, you know, an amount that makes a point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. Now, $9 million seems like a lot. And they imprison him in the Tower of London because he can't pay it,
right.
Obviously.
Sure.
So he's thrown into the tower. He's only in there for, some accounts say 1 day, some say 3 days, but then King James frees him.
Okay. You've learned your lesson.
My sweet bacon. Not my sweet bacon. It's morning. Where's my bacon? Mm-hmm. Get him over here. He frees him from the Tower of London and also waives the entire fine.
Oh my gosh.
So they're definitely fucking, yeah. They've got to be like, it's amazing. But Parliament still hates him.
Sure.
And they're not going back. So they declare Bacon ineligible to hold any future Parliament office.
Oh.
From here on out. Bacon is now retired to a life of study and writing.
Okay.
Which is why most people know him now for that writing that he did. So he's pretty prolific. He does, he's known for his scholarly work and contributions to science and philosophy. He's known as the father of empiricism, which I think is dumb, but you probably just get off on. dumb engineer. He developed a scientific methodology of observation and deduction.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, that's how I do my job. I observe daily life. And then I deduct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I observe a little bit more and I see if there's anything left to deduct. And if there's
anything
not,
interesting,
then I'm done.
That you've deducted recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I deduct a few times. Usually once in the morning.
if I'm bored, I'll deduct in the morning.
Yeah, if I get in early enough. And then just after lunch. And then that's it for the day. Just those two deductions and...
And I go home and no more deductions.
Oh, buddy, no. I walk in the door, I kick up my feet, and I say, do not talk to me. You will have to deduce your own problems.
Do not ask me to observe anything in this house. I am no longer deducing. This whole idea of observation and deduction apparently, supposedly, is so fundamental to modern science that one of his biographers, a man named William Hepworth Dixon, stated, quote, Bacon's influence in the modern world is so great that every man who rides in a train, sends a telegram, follows a steam plow, sits in an easy chair, crosses the channel or the Atlantic, eats a good dinner, enjoys a beautiful garden, or undergoes a painless surgical operation, owes him something.
So nobody nowadays.
I mean, until January like 12th or whatever, I would say, yeah, that's a lot of people. Now, no, I don't think so.
Every once in a while, I'll get like a really good burger from Culver's. That's about the only spot on the list I'm getting, honestly.
You're not following any steam plows?
No. I had to unfollow all of them. Amy started to go through my follows, and I did unfollow all of them.
What are all these steam plowings? This is why you're not deducing at nighttime anymore.
Yeah.
painless surgical operations. That feels legit.
I mean, like, I guess initially, but then afterwards, they all still suck a whole bunch.
Well, I don't know if that was ever different. This might not have been so specific. I ride in trains sometimes. That one counts.
Sometimes. I haven't ridden in a train in a long time.
I rode in a train like a month and a half ago.
How many people think
it was great?
Right.
How many people what?
How many people think riding a train on a daily basis that aren't
I would say more
elitists
than
like you?
Okay, probably most of them. But also, if we're counting subways, that's a lot.
True.
I don't know, 20. When's the last time you sent a telegram?
Boy, it's been a minute.
Makes you think.
It really has. Yeah.
Oh, did you stop playing Red Dead Redemption 2?
I did. Yeah.
You're gonna send so many telegrams when you pick that back up.
Boy,
so that's, and thank you, Francis.
I don't know, like, all the measles outbreaks and the telegrams and stuff. I don't really know how much of that game I'm going to be able to handle. I really don't.
Well, it's instructive for today's time, so I think you probably should play it and learn a lot about how to get through this time. Sorry, you've never sat in an easy chair?
I have an easy couch. It's not very comfortable.
Yeah. That's the same thing.
Yeah.
You've never crossed the Atlantic?
Like in a boat?
Well, it doesn't say.
I mean, they didn't have planes back then.
The most telling thing, I think, is that you've never enjoyed a beautiful garden. And for that, I'm so sorry for you. Like, your life sounds terrible. I'm sorry for what it's become.
Mm.
Anyway, Bacon also wrote books on religion and moral philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's fun.
Yeah. So lots of, like, you know, observation, deduction, and then religion after that. Like, okay. And
if you can't do any of that, yeah, here's something else. Yeah. He also wrote legal works in which he proposed reforms to the English legal system.
Mm-hmm. Like in the, like the statutory laws, or what kind of
14 is cool, right? I think we can all agree. Let's put it on the books. Finally,
we're changing over to a half minus 7 rule. Actually, I don't know if anyone else is cool with it, but I sure am.
We've decided to measure ages in the metric system. Who's on board? He also developed a method for organizing and cataloging libraries.
Oh, really? Okay.
I got a fucking dork. I mean, this is a show that celebrates dorks, but goddamn, this guy. All in all, he was such a famous and accomplished writer that some people have even suggested he was the real author of the works of William Shakespeare.
Oh, really?
I have a fun story about this. So, at my current university, we have a really, really, like, a very good master's program of Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a Shakespeare performance, and it's quite well renowned, and there's a really incredible Shakespeare theater in downtown Stanton, Virginia, which is a small thing. It's a weird thing, and it's amazing, and so we're kind of known for that. So one of my friends and colleagues now runs that Shakespeare program. And there was a time in the fall where we were all getting together for a meeting, and she was like 5 minutes late, and she walked in. She's like, "I'm so sorry. Some high school students were here for a visit, and I was talking to them about Shakespeare and you know, giving them a Shakespeare lecture." Because she's a PhD in Shakespeare scholarship. We have several, and around this particular table, there were several actual Shakespeare scholars, as it turned out. She's like, "I was giving them a lecture on Shakespeare." And I said, "Oh, how did it go?" And her face turned so dark. And she said, "Well, their teacher was a Baconist, so." And I said, "What does that mean?"
Yeah, like, look around the table real quick. Like, is everybody else's?
And many of the heads were like nodding like,
typical.
And I was like, so I think I might also be a Baconist.
Mm-hmm.
I love it so much. And I said, what does that mean? And she goes, she kind of gasped, and she's like, "There are some people out there who think that Francis Bacon wrote Shakespeare. And there are so many reasons why that's obviously false on its face." And she was getting worked up. And I was like, I believe you. I get it. I'm sure that's true. So apparently, even though in these notes I think this is the part that I found, so some people have, and it's true, some people have suggested he's a real author. Mm. I wouldn't say that to a Shakespearean scholar because they get so mad. Oh boy. So anyway, whatever, who cares? So the point is, he loves science. And he's very boring. So, in April of 1626, Sir Francis Bacon is hanging. Oh, he got knighted at some point, so he's Sir Francis Bacon. He's hanging out. Now, the weather now in April of 1626 is unseasonably cold. There's a lot of snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Bacon is with his friend. He's out of town. He's with his friend in Highgate, North London. His friend is Dr. Witherbone, which is the worst name for a doctor.
But the best name for a wrestler. So, I mean,
very good name for a wrestler. Very good name for a murderer. And that's it. But he was actually the king's physician. So he's with Dr. Witherbone, and they're traveling through Highgate in a carriage. And while they were traveling, they were discussing, as normal cool people do, the best methods of preserving food.
Okay.
Now, in 1626, this is probably a very pressing conversation, actually.
Very pressing and cutting edge conversation,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It's like the AI of their time. This.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bacon, as they're riding around, he's suddenly struck with the idea that what if snow could be used to preserve meat?
Hmm. Okay.
Which at this time, again, everyone's like, my mind is blown. What are you talking about? And he immediately wants to say, he's so excited. He's like, we have to test it right now. We have this snow. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah. You cut off your finger.
Put your head in the snow. I will chop off your neck. If I can eat you in 2 weeks, we've done it. So he calls the carriage to stop. The two men, they get out and they go to some house of some woman nearby. They knock on the door. This woman answers, very confused. And Bacon is like, hey, can we buy a chicken? And she's like, why would you think I have a chicken? They're like, you're poor. You have a chicken, right? And she's like, well, I do have a chicken, but why would you just like assume I have a chicken?
She's also like, and your name's Bacon and you don't have bacon. So what the fuck?
Can you give me a fucking pig, you idiot? So they say, can we buy a chicken? And she says, all right, governor. I assume she's, that's why I think all the poor people in England sound like.
Right.
So she sells them a chicken. They buy it from her. They buy it, and they immediately return it to her, and they order her to kill it and disembowel it.
This is gross things for poor people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Why is this chicken have all its innards inside?
They're probably so confused when she handed them a live chicken. They're like, no.
A chicken.
This is not a chicken. This is an angry little beast you've given me.
It's dead, yes. However, it has feathers and a heart. Can you please take care of this chicken?
It tastes horrible, I'm afraid.
I took a bite and I did not like it. Could you please fix this dead chicken? So she does. She takes it back. She plucks the chicken mostly. She disembowels it mostly. I don't think she's too eager to.
Yeah, I don't think she's getting paid a whole lot for this job. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, I don't think Bacon's going to know the difference.
Right.
So she does all this. Bacon, he takes the dead empty chicken and he takes it out into the snow and he's shoveling snow and he packs the chicken full of snow.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. And in doing so, he, I think, genuinely invents frozen chicken.
Right. Yeah.
Or no one has done this before that we know about.
Or like a turducken kind of with snow.
Tersnoken.
Like a tersnoken. Yeah.
Like a tersnoken. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Now he's trying this out. Unfortunately, this little science experiment did lead him to catch pneumonia immediately. Well, it's going to happen. You know, something's got to get you.
Yeah.
Now, he's so sick so quickly that he cannot make the trip back home to where he lives. So he gets sick while he's in Highgate still. So he goes to the house of the Earl of Arundel.
Right. Yep.
Arundel or Arundel.
Yeah.
Or,
Elsa's dead. I met him. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And he says, I died in a shipwreck. What could I do for you? And he's, what's his name? It was Doc Ock.
Alfred Molina?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
Well, in Frozen 2.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he's the king in Frozen 1. But he is in Frozen 2.
I don't give him a lot of lines in Frozen 1. So that's fine.
Well, here's a shock for you. He also didn't have a lot of lines in Frozen 2 when he was already dead, but he had a few, and it was Alfred Molina in Frozen 2 for sure. I don't know. Maybe or maybe not. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Alfred Molina's like, I guess you can stay here. Mm-hmm. But they're like, you're kind of sick, right? And he's like, yeah, I have pneumonia. Mm-hmm. I'm very sick. And Alfred Molina is like, well, why don't you stay in this bed?
Yeah, actually, there's a daycare in town. I think we'll be able to take care of you. Cutting edge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, do you like solitary confinement? Because I have the daycare for you.
Do you know what like, Bluey is? Because
there is an iPad that plays only Bluey. You can also play Bluey games. We've expanded the whole programming situation. So you could have this bed. So he leads him to a bed in a side room, and the bed itself is wet.
Okay.
Like it's damp.
Mm-hmm. It's not great.
It's also, no, especially if you have pneumonia. No. It's not like ideal. it's also cold. It's like far away from any fires, and there's no, it's not like a room with a fireplace, which is most places.
Not where you want to recover from pneumonia.
You go to the cellar, yeah. I guess, and just, yeah.
Pneumonia, you what? Say? Ah, to the meat locker with you.
I have the room where we get pneumonia. Yes, here it is. So this unsurprisingly makes his condition worse. So now he's in, I mean, incredibly bad shape. Mm-hmm. He is on death's doorstep. And while he is thus, he dictates a letter to the Earl of Arundel, who, whose house this is.
Sure, yeah.
Saying mostly, I assume, fuck you. Yeah. But he writes this letter in which he notes that the experiment with the chicken.
Importantly, here's where the chicken is located.
Yep. The chicken itself had, quote, succeeded excellently well.
Oh, okay.
So I guess the chicken is fine.
Well,
taste
wise, yes.
Yeah, culinarily speaking, yeah. But the effect of the whole illness on him as a person. Now he told the Earl, the effect of the illness is likely to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But it did do excellently with the chicken.
I want everyone to note, I did not get this from the chicken. Do not tell anyone I said that I got some chicken.
And if I have one legacy, I would say it's probably chicken.
Yeah.
And a few days later, Francis Bacon dies.
Mm.
Soon after his death, though, reports start coming in about a ghost that's been sighted in Highgate.
Oh.
People are reporting a semi-plucked chicken running in circles around Pond Square. And when anyone approaches that chicken, it vanishes into thin air.
I wasn't expecting the chicken to be the ghost. I really wasn't.
So we spent a lot of time talking about Francis Bacon. But to be clear, this is a story about the ghost of Francis Bacon's chicken.
Okay. Okay. I mean, in all reality, this does kind of go against how well he thinks he preserved the chicken, because it went to ghost like immediately.
Or did he preserve it so well that it will never leave this plane? Was Snow such a good idea that he really locked it in? The chicken is also being seen in the lower branches of a nearby tree.
Okay. Still plucked, still headless, still gutless.
Yep.
Okay.
But when people get close, it disappears.
Okay. I don't know if I want to go close to this chicken, you know?
Like- Well, to me, it seems like a free meal, yeah. So I'm interested. I mean, I will say again, this is still the 1600s.
Yeah.
So people are so fucking hungry, I assume. Ever since then, people have reported seeing a spectral white bird resembling a plucked chicken running in frenzied circles, flapping its wings before disappearing into nowhere. At least 20 of these sightings occurred in the 20th century, most of them during the Second World War.
Whenever everyone in Britain was like starving to death because of the Blitz.
Yeah, and chickens like,
yeah, and
it's my time to shine.
They probably like a field of bowling balls. They probably think half of them are chickens at that point, too.
No, it's not like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. No, it's different. This is real. And in 1943, aircraftman Terrence Long was crossing Pond Square late at night when he was startled to hear the sound of horses' hooves and carriage wheels behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But he turns around. There's no carriage.
Right.
But he can still hear it.
Right.
So he's very confused. Mm-hmm. And then he hears a piercing shriek. He looks back again, and he is stunned to see something which looks like a half-plucked, shivering chicken screaming and running around in circles until it eventually disappears.
Oh.
Terrence then reports this to an air raid precautions warden,
mm-hmm.
who told him that the bird was regularly seen in the area and that another warden actually had chased it as well, hoping to catch it for dinner until it ran into a brick wall and disappeared. Similarly, another wartime sighting was recorded by a Mrs. J. Greenhill, who reported seeing the chicken on several occasions, describing it as a, quote, large whitish bird.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1960s, on the post-war,
mm-hmm.
a motorist whose car had broken down reported seeing a half-plucked chicken in a state of distress, squawking and running in circles in this area. Going towards it, concerned it was an injured chicken, mm-hmm. he was startled when it suddenly vanished into thin air. And the most recent confirmed sighting of this poultrygeist.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Thank you. Yeah. Was in 1970. That was a note from Caroline, actually. But I will take credit. A courting couple was getting amorous in Pond Square when a squawking chicken suddenly dropped out of the air and landed next to them, flapping its wings and going absolutely fucking bug fuck crazy.
Make enough room for the Holy Spirit in there, you guys.
And the Holy Spirit looks like this. The chicken proceeded to run around, flapping its wings, freaking them out before they ran away, and the chicken disappeared once again into thin air.
Would you say it perhaps cock-blocked them? Hey, look at you.
Mr. Pretty good, huh? Mr. Not even labeled. Pretty good. Nah, I didn't remember. I just felt it. It was just like I was one with the button. That one needed a rim shot. Thank so you. Bad. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the story of Sir Francis Bacon's ghost chicken.
Mm.
And I want to know, I did look to see, like, after the fact, I was like, well, like, are people going to be mad? Like, is there a Sir Francis Bacon ghost that people are going to be like, bait and switch?
Mm.
I didn't look long, but I didn't see any evidence of that. So
that guy, I mean, he had finished business. No one finished all of his business.
Finished it all.
Mm-hmm.
He betrayed his friend, mm-hmm. and that turned out to be the best thing he'd ever done.
He got to see his wife graduate high school, and that was it. He was good.
On his deathbed, he was 118, and finally his wife graduated high school, and he was like, aha, I am done.
I'm so proud of you and that GED program.
Oh, man. We don't get a lot of ghost animals, and I love this.
Usually highlight when we do get a ghost animal.
Yeah, yeah. So, very good, very good. And that is the story of the ghost chicken. So, if you liked this, gosh, I'll tell you, please, please subscribe to the show, rate it, review it if you want. Tell your friends, tell your family, spread the word. We could really use some more folks listening. And if you want even more of these absolutely bonkers ghost stories, join Ghost Plus. We're building up quite a library over there at this point, and you get a 7-day free trial. Check out a bunch of extra ghost stories, a bunch of extra Smith Show stories, which are like this show, but just like more like weird historical stuff, no ghosts. And there's some other things, we're releasing new stuff. It's wild. Try it for 7 days for free. See if it's worth $6 a month to you. Spoiler alert, it is, but you know, go see for yourself. Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. We do jazz here sometimes, and during that time, our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video and website editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Kai Villanis, Sam Murdoch, and Jennifer Jones. Merch designs are from Fox and Quill Studio. Go follow them on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. And you can see their brand new work. I think it will be up by the time this episode drops at isthisaghost.com. You can see the things they're working on. Spoiler alert, one of the many designs is a old Spaghosti factory set of products. It's so good. It's so good. So go check it out. Patrick, any final thoughts on ghost chickens?
No, just starving now. They're really, really hungry. Lots of bacon, lots of chicken this episode. Really hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the moral of this story is do not try to do like cool new experiments with animals ever. Definitely in winter, but definitely not ever.
Yeah, we know everything we need to know about animals by now. No need to do any experiments, guys. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you do your own, you're going to probably end up as the subject of the next episode of Is This a Ghost?